Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 256, I'm exhausted, of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her prayers. Think about that for a second. Yeah, it's going to be a very cool show. Just know that before we begin, it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click onto iTunes after the episode to rate and review the show, because I sit here twiddling my thumbs waiting to hear from you. That's right. Your feedback just makes my day. My whole team just sits there saying, when's the next one coming? Do you know what I'm saying? So we'll remind you again later on, but that's your first official reminder. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
I am absolutely thrilled to have Elizabeth Bernstein on her podcast. I have been a fangirl forever. She is a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Her background is tremendous. You know, it's interesting. For her, the key point for her is that she's written her column for the past 10 years. It covers all aspects of relationships and focuses on academic research in the fields of social psychology, communication, neuroscience, and other fields related to relationships. That's why this column in the Wall Street Journal is called Bonds. And absolutely, all you have to do is literally just Google Elizabeth Bernstein and look at the amazing topics that she's covered. So I always eagerly look for her column in the Wall Street Journal and just soak it all in. So her latest one was all about the science of prayer. Now, you know, I've been doing a lot of podcasts about issues that relate to COVID. How can we navigate through? How can we possibly enhance our resilience? And of course, we've gone through everything from the science of immunology to, well, when we talked about the science of friendship and when Lydia was on. So this is all really pertinent to how you live your life on a day-by-day basis with so much uncertainty out there. So the science of prayer was just absolutely timely. Elizabeth, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Awesome. All right. So I want to make sure everyone knows that this one column you wrote was just so chock full of marvelous science, speaking of science, that I want to kind of run through some of it because it was so provocative. That whole Pew Research Center survey just in March, a little while ago, found that more than half of Americans had prayed to end the spread of COVID. Were you surprised by that?
I'm not. I wasn't myself because many years ago, before I wrote this column, I did cover religion at the Wall Street Journal. So I had seen, I had done that actually at the time of September 11th. And so I have seen the cycle of people do turn towards prayer in a crisis. You know, that old saying, there's no atheist in a foxhole. Well, there probably are some diehard atheists. And in fact, research has shown there are. But many people turn to prayer. One of the researchers I spoke to said it this way, prayer quickens in a crisis. And I feel that that's such an interesting way to say it. We turn to something when we really are uncertain. We really don't know what else to do. So I wasn't surprised by that Pew study. I went looking for it, sort of expecting it would happen.
How interesting. You know, when I read that, my eyebrows went up. And one of my team members laughed about that, saying, I wonder how many eyebrows actually go up now since no one's been able to have Botox. Well, anyway, that was just a little side thing. We were all laughing. So, you know, as you went through your column, You also mentioned the research of Dr. David Rosmarin from Harvard Medical School, who is the director of the Spirituality and Mental Health Program at McLean Hospital. And, you know, looking at this, he was... It's interesting. Your quote from him was, "I would never advise a patient who doesn't want to pray to pray." But people are now pivoting to this, and he incorporates prayer into the treatment programs he has for some of the patients with anxiety, depression, or other mental health conditions. And he's done some really interesting studies on prayer, and I'm looking at this whole issue of being less angry, having fewer negative emotions, being able to calm the nervous system, and really rein in the fight and flight response. Were you impressed by that research?
Sure, it is. These are sort of things that we're all looking for in every way, I think. We're constantly looking for some fix, sort of, for lack of a better word, but we might meditate, we try to be mindful, exercise, you know, do these things that sort of bring down our reactivity and reduce our stress. And so here's one I felt that may be right in front of us. This is why I wanted to study this. This might be right in front of us. So many of us do it. We've been raised on it. Others of us might not quite know how to do it or what's, you know, we don't know what we believe. But here's this thing that's right there. And if it has all these benefits that we want, reduce the stress. Right now, every person in the world pretty much needs that. It seemed to me like very, very important to research and look into it for me as a reporter. But also, I was thrilled to see that my hunch was right, that there's some good benefits there that are health benefits in our body. Now, we can't study the existence. I'm not a scientist. I should say scientists cannot study the existence of God. There's no way for them to prove that. But they can study the health benefits, what's happening in the body as a person prays. That's what they do, and this is what they found. And yes, I think it's super impressive.
Well, then you also mentioned a 2005 study in the Journal of Behavioral Medicine. And in this case, they were looking at secular meditation versus spiritual meditation because, you know, there's this crossover with, as it were, I mean, people oftentimes say that prayer is meditation. And so tell us a little bit about what they found in the comparison between one group and the other.
This is really interesting. So they find that meditation has all these benefits we're talking about, sort of reduced reactivity to our emotions, slows and calms down our nervous system, our fight or flight response, you know, does all of these stress-reducing things. And so they decided to see if prayer was different, if it had the same effects, fewer effects, more effects. So they studied it and they told some people, they brought, you know, this is a very well done research study by academics. And so they bring people in, randomize people, and they divide them up in groups. And one group, they taught how to meditate using sort of just positive things that they would think about, it's beautiful out, nature is beautiful, these kinds of things. And then another group they asked to meditate spiritually. So they thought of like sort of God as a positive thing, you know, God is love, this kind of thing. So they found that, yes, the meditation group did well and had all of these stress-reducing things happen to them, but the spiritual meditation group did even better. And so they were surprised by that, and I was surprised by that. And their theory here is interesting. It's that you get all the benefits of calming your actual system, your nerves down when you meditate spiritually, but also they found that they theorized that the spiritual people, the people who, you know, meditated spiritually, were gaining some sort of support. They felt supported by a higher power, and that was boosting these effects.
How interesting. You know, you wrote a beautiful piece here when you said, imagine carrying a backpack hour after hour. It will start to feel impossibly heavy. But if you can hand it off to someone else to hold for a while, it will feel lighter when you pick it up again. And this was a quote, this is what prayer can do. And this was Amy Wacholtz, who is an associate professor in clinical health psychology director at the University of Colorado. And she apparently was the lead researcher on the meditation study. And it's about getting that burden off you so that you can literally rest, which really speaks to what you said. I don't think people really sometimes fully appreciate that unburdening.
I don't think we do. We try, obviously, to do it, I think, in friendships. A good friendship works that way, back and forth. And if I can call you up and I'm having a very tough day and I can tell you, you know, my troubles, even if you don't have any answer, it just helps to tell you. For example, recently I was, you know, crying to a friend, things were hard, and she said, I just don't know what to say, and she got a little anxious. I said, I don't need you to say anything, just can you just be quiet and make nice comforting noises? Yes, okay, great. So I felt much more comforted in that situation, and this may be happening when people pray. If they believe in a higher power, they feel the same thing, that they're unburdening themselves, somebody's listening. And so it's a very similar situation, and that effect to me is very interesting.
Interesting. So in my laboratory, the National Institutes of Health, I've studied stress and cortisol, basically stress hormone. And I've noticed that there are many ways that you can ignite the fight and flight response and fear. And also you could go to the pain place. What I found fascinating was in this meditation study that the people who had the spiritual meditation practice tolerated pain almost twice as long when asked to put their hand in an ice water bath. What did you think of that?
I just think it's incredible. And I mean, just if you even think about putting your hand in this ice water bath, I've never done that, but the researchers assured me that it is very painful quite quickly. And so to keep it in there, it must, again, show some type of calming and some kind of support, like something larger than me is sort of helping. That's all I can think of. And researchers, you know, say they don't really know. Again, you don't know why these things are happening. They see them happen. And the fact that they are happening, that pain reduction is pretty striking.
Okay, let's just get to the heart of it here, Elizabeth. All right, prayer can also help your marriage. Let's go for this. Okay, now apparently these were a bunch of, yeah, let's just cut through it here. This is really important because one of the things that we've noted in a number of countries around the world, they're noting that the incidence of divorces, separations are skyrocketing when people have been, you know, doing a lockdown for an extended period of time. Let me just wipe the shock off my face. So if you were already, you know, a little on the edge there, you know, all you needed to do is be locked in with one another for an extended period of time. And I would say things would get a little hairy. But what happened here? What did the Florida State University researchers find?
This is really interesting, and this is something that they're starting to use in some marital therapy. So if you're somebody who is comfortable with prayer, there's some marital therapies out there that will incorporate it into it, and this is why. These researchers found that if I say I'm, you know, very upset with my partner, I'm starting to think, you know, what a slob, I can't believe he didn't clean the kitchen, and I'm getting irritated, really irritated. If I stop in that moment and I pray for something good to happen to him. So I stop and think, wow, you're so irritated with this slob. And I think, okay, you know what? I hope he has a good day at work. He's been stressful, you know, stressed out lately. And I pray for something good to happen to him, not us, not the relationship, him. Then what the results are, I feel better about the relationship, and then he feels better about the relationship. He doesn't even know I prayed. And this is what's happening. When I stop my negative thought, this is the psychology behind it. I stop my negative thought. I think something positive about him, hope something positive. Then I've calmed down and readjusted my thinking, oh, yeah, I really love that slob. So then he comes back at me, and he knows that. Even without me telling him, he can see how I've started to treat him a little better because I'm no longer furious. And so it has this very real effect this thing that seems so fuzzy, prayer, can have a deep, real effect.
Huh. You know, it's really interesting when you think about it. You've got one person doing the praying, and then you've got the one being prayed for. And it's a fascinating way to kind of look at a couple that's trying to navigate possibly one of the most difficult times in their life. I mean, think about it economically. Maybe they have been affected by COVID in terms of either themselves or family members or friends they know and back and forth. This is a very stressful time, let alone if you have a couple munchkins running around the house, you know, terrorizing everything. It's a very, very challenging time. So I think you noted that the lead researcher said, and it reinforces the idea that you are on the same team. So it's no more about, you know, you versus him or her. You know, it's you're on the same team. It's a unifying thing. Does that make sense?
Exactly. And what it's doing is something that psychologists call cognitive reappraisal. You can do this without prayer. And in fact, a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy is based on it. You want to readjust your negative thoughts to positive thoughts, or at least real thoughts, because much of negative thinking is not correct. So you want to readjust negative to positive, and you're going to feel better then. So then this is prayer then becomes, in this situation, a mechanism to do that. The key about prayer, though, is you have to be open to it. It's not going to help if you're an atheist and you really believe that there's no reason to pray. You're not going to see benefits because you're just going to be shut down to it. That's fine. If that's your belief, that's fine. But if you are somebody who's open to it or who does pray, it can have these powerful benefits.
I love it. It absolutely fabulous. So when I was reading your column, here I am. I'm kind of rolling along as I always do. Absorbing this excellent science and your beautiful articulation of all of this. And then boom, you get personal. And you talked about something that happened to you, I believe you said last summer. Could you share with us?
Sure. Thank you. Last summer I had a very difficult summer. My father became very sick immediately. He went from very healthy to walking in the hospital for elective surgery and then having a heart attack and a stroke that day. A few weeks later, still in the hospital, he had a cardiac arrest while I was there with him one morning in the room. And so that cardiac arrest, for 4 minutes, doctors worked to revive his heart. And I was in the hallway beside myself, really, truly beside myself. And, wow, 4 minutes can seem like an hour. And a nurse came up to me because I was crying and pacing. And she said, "Do you want to pray?" And I've never been somebody who prayed much. So I said, "Well, yes, I do, but I have no idea how." And she just took my hands quickly and she bowed her head and touched my forehead with hers. And we bowed our heads and she started, "Dear Lord, please send us strength." And she started to pray. She prayed for both of us. And so in that moment, I felt, well, I got through that moment. They came out and said, "You know, we've revived your father." You know, that's fantastic, of course. What the prayer did for me is it centered me, and it gave me support, it gave me strength, it gave me connection. My dad wasn't out of the woods. They rushed him to ICU, but I went down to the chapel. I prayed some more. I had a chaplain. I called for a chaplain. He came and taught me the Serenity Prayer. So I got through this really terrible day that I didn't think I'd get through. And then the ones that followed, and then the weeks that followed, by starting to pray. And I prayed for strength. And I found it so centering. It was so powerful. It's what made me want to write this article.
Wow. Wow. And you know, when I read that part, I got to tell you, Elizabeth, I was really blown away. I always love it when someone pivots to a personal story so that it lends so much humanity to what you're writing about. It's like I'm a human being and it all happened to me too. That Serenity Prayer is so powerful. You know, as a physician, I'm someone who's a very strong believer in the power of prayer. As a scientist, I believe, as you do, that it's obviously one of those situations where it's almost impossible to study in many respects. But it's, I just accept it for what it is. And there it is. And that serenity prayer is just so amazing. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And powerful words. And so you said in your column, I return to the serenity prayer again and again. When do you do that, Elizabeth?
Well, quite often, and it's interesting to me, there was a little sign outside the chapel when I ran down there as they rushed my dad to the ICU that said, call a chaplain. So I did. And he came and he said, do you want to speak this prayer? I said, I don't know this prayer. So he taught it to me. We must have said it 20 to 30 times because I was sobbing and really beside myself. And then I calmed down and I felt this like inner strength and peace. It was incredible. And so that experience I have held with me for quite some time. I have said it. My father was sick. He's still with us, not quite the same as he was in any way, really, but he's with us. And so I say it when I feel heartbroken because he isn't the same. Or I say it when my mom needs strength and I need to find the strength to help her. When I'm going through this, when a friend's father died from COVID. I mean, it's over and over now, but I think I've set it on deadline when I'm super anxious. So I don't wait for the big problems to come. So I just find this one. And then I was surprised. I did not know that that prayer's a centerpiece of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh, God,
yes. I did not know that.
Yes.
And so that's very naive and embarrassing for me to admit. But then when I heard that, after when I told a friend, hey, this happened, this experience, and she mentioned it, it makes perfect sense. This is maybe one of an Alcoholics Anonymous could be arguably one of the biggest sort of ways people use mental health therapy. That's one of the biggest mental health tools or programs out there. And here's this prayer at the center of it. I found that to be so powerful.
It's actually noted during each and every AA meeting and Narcotics Anonymous and all the rest of it, because they finally realize that this is bigger than they are in many respects. You know, as a physician, we now know that, you know, addiction is a true medical condition. This is not a lack of discipline or something ridiculous. You know, this is the real deal, and we now have a full society of addiction specialists. And I'm just, it's really interesting. I've watched people with very serious addiction say the prayer, and it's such a relief to them. I actually perceive an unburdening. And I know when I've asked them, straight up, they tell you that it's just like a perceptible feeling. I've just taken that 900 pounds off my back, and I now know also I'm partnering. And I think you mentioned that in your column as well. It's like a partnership relationship with God, whatever God is, as you define it for yourself. And I think that that's a great feeling for many people to have, especially think about it, right? They're in lockdown and they're all by themselves. What if they don't have a family around? What if they have nothing much around? That's a very terrifying situation in a big way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Then they've got this, and at least there you feel like you're not alone. You're not, there's something else going on. You know, I'm going to ask you to think about this for a second, Elizabeth. You know, you and I have been reading the papers about what goes on with churches all the way across the country of all denominations. It could be synagogues. It's, whatever it is. And, people wanting to basically break the rules and just show up for church because they feel like they need it so much. And they want that sort of collective feeling. What are your feelings about this? Because I know this has been quite controversial.
It's interesting. I understand that feeling. I can certainly appreciate this feeling that becomes it's seemingly a deep need to connect, to be together, especially if the many people pray as alone. But if you pray as a group, if you feel very connected to your congregation, if that is how you primarily pray or an important way you pray, then I can see that that, when it goes away, becomes immediately a very big loss for you, and this desire to keep it, you know, and to cling to it and hang on to it. But it's unfortunately, as we've seen, not been safe. You know, unfortunately, there's been some striking examples of pastors who have died keeping their congregations going. So I feel that we all have to make ourselves safe. But when I looked at the research about this, this is what's interesting. There's another body of prayer research that shows that the type of prayer you do matters for the health benefits. So you have health benefits when you do a certain kind of prayer, and you don't get them when you do this other kind of prayer. And the two types that they're looking at and that they show this with is, one is a prayer when you feel that you are in collaboration with God. And so I feel that I'm praying to God for support, for strength, for protection. I will do everything I can do here on the ground for those things for myself, for what I'm praying for, but I'm hoping that God will step in or the higher power will help me out here. That's collaborative prayer. That shows all these benefits. So the prayer, the other kind, is this prayer where I defer to God. If I think, well, you know what, it does not matter what I do on earth because God's got this. It's all his responsibility. It's all in his hands. Well, those people do not show the same health benefits, and here's why. They're not protecting their own health on the ground first. And so if I say have cancer and I think, well, it doesn't matter what I do, God's going to take care of this or not. You know, he's going to, God knows what he's planned for me. And I don't go to chemo because God's going to take care of this one way or another. Then I don't give myself that running start. I'm not doing anything here on earth to help my health. And that's what they're seeing. And this is similar. It shows up now when you want to run off to church and not wear a mask and be in a congregation at a time that it is dangerous, then the health benefits may not show up because of this. You've deferred to God, but you're not protecting yourself either. You're not collaborating.
God helps those who help themselves.
Exactly.
And that's really what it is. I mean, you can't just sit back and go, okay, have at it, God. You know, you got to do the work. And the work means being responsible, you know, for yourself. You know where I actually really became quite entranced with this whole issue of a prayer? When I met many years ago, Dr. Larry Dossey. Have you read his work?
I have not.
Interesting. At some point, Dossey, he was when the National Institutes of Health started their first Office of Alternative Medicine, when Dr. Bernadine Healy was the first woman to head up the National Institutes of Health. They were looking at many, many different kinds of platforms, everything from nutrition, you know, to meditation, to prayer. Andrew Weil was involved in some of the early studies, for instance, when we were looking at lifestyle practices, et cetera. And in my laboratory, I was looking at stress hormone, and then I got wind of the fact that this new office opened up, and of course, you know, I think too many years at UC Berkeley, you know, kind of activated in my brain. I said, what? Say what? Complementary medicine? This, you know, what? And so I was invited to come on over and add my razor sharp critiques to all of the newer studies coming through. And that's how I met Larry. And Dr. Larry Dossey is I believe he's an internist. And he was fascinated with prayer, and some of the earliest work was done by him. And really fascinating studies where you would have people praying for people in an ICU. This was at UC San Francisco. You literally have them praying, you know, very positive thoughts or whatever. And then, I mean, it's a little funky to say, and then the others were either not praying for certain people or, you know, almost negative, It's sort of like, I hope things don't work out well. But, you know, how would the people, you know, in the ICU ever know? So it was going to be, they were playing around with whether or not any of this matters. And they actually did find a statistically significant number of people improved who had the positive prayers, which I thought was quite provocative. And Lord knows it invited all kinds of critique, you know, from traditional, you know, scientists. But Larry was dogged and he kept going and he wrote a number of really interesting consumer books on the topic, just really awakening people to the whole top, just the whole theme of prayer and how important it is to have another dimension of health rather than just being, you know, obsessed about what your blood pressure is, that this is just as important. So when I read your wonderful column here in the Wall Street Journal, it brought back a lot of interesting memories about the early inklings of really good randomized controlled trials and the need for some good science as far as we could take it. Because to your point, we don't know, there's no way to know about the existence of God that we're aware of. So we're sort of settling with what we can do. And it certainly seems to be quite positive. What do you think?
I think it is positive, and it would be really nice to see more of it. Apparently, it does not get very much funding. Researcher after researcher explained that to me. But to me, that's a shame, because if here is something that is going to calm us down, it's going to help us with our stress response and presumably these stress hormones, and then we aren't going to study it, but look at the health benefits that could have. We study every other thing. I did not in my article get into the research that's done on the physical health. They're studying it for blood pressure. They're studying it for heart issues, and they're finding positive benefits. So, and that's because you're calming down, so your blood pressure goes down, so won't that help your heart? You know, so here's this thing that's free and easy. Many, many people are comfortable with it. Certainly many more people, I would say, I would believe, are more comfortable with prayer than they are with going to therapy. And so how about utilizing it as a health, you know, option to incorporate into our health care for people who are open to it? But also, how about studying it more? It's just fascinating.
I love it. Well, you know, now what makes me much more comfortable are a number of my colleagues are looking at meditation per se. They oftentimes use either mindfulness or transcendental meditation, mostly because in each case, especially with TM, there are really more rigorous metrics. You know, you are meditating for 20 minutes, that type of thing. And with mindfulness, you could do the same kind of thing with the practice. And they're looking at it with regard to epigenetics. Ooh, isn't that cool? What's epigenetics? Well, you know, it's basically mass majority of our genes actually have a dimmer switch on them, for lack of a better way to put this. But so if you have a gene for, say, for instance, obesity, which is the FTA gene, you can actually downregulate it, turn that dimmer switch down if you do things like physical activity on a routine basis, if you do excellent nutrition on a routine basis. You could actually watch what happens with gene expression. How cool is that? So they found the same thing happen when they studied mindful meditation, for instance, in people who were doing things like this. This was a fascinating one from the positivity psychologists at North Carolina and UCLA. And what they were able to find was that if you took two groups of people, one cohort of people took really good care of themselves. You know, they did all the right things. You know, get up early in the morning, you exercise, you know, you have an excellent whole food-based diet, and it's all good, all right? The second group does exactly the same thing, but the second group did one other thing. And this is a little kind of an iteration of what we're talking about. What they did was they were of service to other people. They were volunteers. So they gave of themselves in a big way. So they'd always show up at that food bank every single week. They would always fill in the blank. Some kind of connecting with other people in a big way all throughout the week, in addition to taking care of themselves. So what the epigeneticists did was they looked at a cluster of genes that reflect inflammation. You and I know, Elizabeth, that inflammation is the basis of disease. So if you look at heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all the rest of it, obesity, these are inflammatory conditions. They aggregate something called the inflammasome. So what they're looking at is like, wow, what happens to these genes when you do these two different forms of lifestyle? Meditation, you know, was obviously a big piece of this, taking good care of themselves, but adding now this piece of reaching out to others, connecting. Did that really matter? Well, son of a gun, it did. Because what the researchers were able to find was that indeed the genetic expression in those people who were giving of themselves was so far less in the inflammasome than it was for people just kind of taking care of themselves and doing their thing. And so what's my whole point to this? When you're, you know, it goes back to that, almost that marital example you gave, Elizabeth, which is you're giving of yourself, you're praying for your partner, you're showing compassion, you're reflecting upon and being empathetic with where they're coming from. And you're doing the same thing when you reach out and you do great things for other people. So I think that's kind of, you know, another piece of what prayer is all about. It's not just about, oh, please take good care of me. It's more like, you know, there's also a kind of a communal, please take care of this earth. Please take care of the global community. And it goes on and on. What do you think about that?
I think it's fantastic, fascinating, but also I'm not surprised as somebody who studies relationships or writes about them and reads the research on them all the time. Relationships and our need to be connected to people is just a very basic human need. So I feel that, you know, it doesn't surprise me that we feel better. It's so important that babies who do not get touched, do not get held, there's failure to thrive. They do not grow. And so it's so basic. So it makes perfect sense to me then that we can react so powerfully. Our bodies can, you know, turn off, you know, a genetic response to, you know, that's negative when we connect. They're that powerful for us. But I think the challenge then is to keep it in mind and to keep sort of finding these ways in our day, in our lives, to remind ourselves we can do this. You know, I can connect, I can gain these benefits by reminding myself. I can feel better because I changed my bad mood by reaching out to someone else. Suddenly I'm no longer brooding about whatever I'm mad about. I'm trying to help someone else and I'm focused on that, and suddenly I feel a lot better. It's fantastic.
It sounds to me, you know, as we wrap this up, that just writing this changed your life.
It did. I think I came into it, this feeling that that serenity prayer did change my life. Learning it, going through this experience, getting through these difficult days, and then sort of realizing, wow, there's this whole thing right in front of me I haven't done. I'm not sure what I believe out there is helping me, but I know I believe what it does for me as a centering practice. And I feel I'm putting down the burden. So I think all of it has, this whole experience of having it happen to me and then continually practicing this in this dark time we're all in, but then, yes, sitting down and looking at what the research says and learning more about it, sure, I think it did change me, and that's why I'm hoping other people, and you know, I had quite a few letters. I was worried about when this went out, who would write and tell me, on both sides, I thought I was going to get, you know, the people who said there's no God and the people who said it's not science. But instead, I got a tremendous amount of letters saying, thank you, this helped me, this reminded me. One woman said, like, I am writing from Ethiopia. I fought with my husband. I swear this is a true email. I fought with my husband last night. Then I opened up my phone. I read your article. I prayed for him, and I feel better. So I'm hoping in that way, too, it's profound for me to realize that something that I learned, if I can help other people understand it, might help them.
I love this. I really do. Do you now routinize, you know, I don't mean like super strict or anything, but do you routinize prayer in your life on a daily basis?
I think it comes comes up. I don't sit down. Now is my time to pray before I go to bed. But I find it coming up now. When I need it, then I turn to it, and I just find it coming up much more organically, which for me is nice. And something, that it's sort of almost, like I said, organically threaded through my life right now, and I'm very surprised, given who I know myself to be. Often, I'm type A, running, and again, not somebody who prayed much in the past. So it's a really nice discovery, and it's been very helpful.
Are you also in that 50% of people who are now praying about the COVID situation?
Well, I've certainly prayed for the strength to get through it. I've prayed for everybody I know. Prayed, my father's here but not strong. My mother's taking care of him, has her own health issues. I mean, just I've prayed across the board, protect both my sisters who are doctors in hospitals. So, please, yes, please heal our world in this way and many other ways. But please, yes. Please help us right now. Mm-hmm, definitely.
Wow. I love it. I mean, woo, like I said, a very powerful piece you wrote, Elizabeth. Everyone, we have been speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein. She is a reporter and columnist with the Wall Street Journal. The name of her column is Bonds. It's all about the every aspect of relationships. And on the academic research in the fields of social psychology, communication, neuroscience, and other fields related to relationships. The name of this column is Bonds, which is highly appropriate. Elizabeth, I can't tell you, how grateful enough we are that you were on the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Okay, everyone out there, you heard this. This was a fabulous interview. And I know you were taking lots of notes. And wow, it probably affected you too. How about that serenity prayer? So take a moment now, run on over to iTunes, rate and review the show, and let me know how you really feel about this, because your feedback is just golden to me. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay safe, stay well.